The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
And we're back for another edition of Raised by Wolves. We are presented to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And we're getting closer and closer to the All-Star break. It's coming up this weekend, just a couple games for the Wolves this week. And in fact, they're playing one of these couple games this week as we speak, as we are taping this podcast. The Houston Rockets at Target Center taking on the Wolves. So I'm Manny Hill. Derek James is here as well. We got a lot to get to as we got the All-Star break coming up. And, okay, so first thing I wanted to talk about is Friday's game against the Chicago Bulls.
We don't have to talk about it.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like we've talked about this game in some iteration.
I know.
Many times.
Yeah. Eastern Conference team that's in the bottom of the standings in the Eastern Conference.
On the
road. Wolves playing them on the road. Wolves look good in stretches during the game, and then they
were up by
what,
16 in the third?
Yeah, I think it was 16.
And then they just let off the gas.
It was 73-57, and then the next thing you know, like a few minutes later, the Bulls had like tied the game.
By the way, you just said, yeah, I think it was 16. It was 73-57.
Yeah.
Like, your recall is amazing as always.
Yeah, I know. It's, boy, it's, I'm trying to figure out if I should be like annoyed by this at this point of the year, or if it's just like this is who this team is this year. And I guess I'm not as worked up about it because it is like Eastern Conference opponents, and it's not like teams that you're going to have to face in the playoffs unless you get to the NBA Finals.
And it's not like a team that's going to gain ground on them.
Right. And it's not even the teams that they're losing to, like even if the Wolves got to the Finals, they're not going to play the Chicago Bulls in the NBA Finals. I mean, they're not going to play the Brooklyn Nets in the NBA
Finals.
They're
probably not playing the Magic.
Yeah, probably not playing Orlando. But it's like, still, it's like, come on. Like, you can't. These games, they're against lesser opponents, but these games matter when you're trying to, you know, maybe get the third seed in the Western Conference.
They're still a half game back despite all this futility on the road.
And that's the amazing thing to me is that they can kick away some of these games against lesser opponents and still look up and find that they still have a legitimate shot at getting the number three seed. And then you wonder, well, if they would have won two or three of these games instead of kicking them away, they'd have two games on the Spurs.
It's like
right
when
now.
Someone holds the door for you, but you're just a few steps too far back, and instead of running, you just keep walking.
You just keep walking.
And just say, oh, thanks, I'll be right there. Like, yeah. The Wolves aren't just running.
Oh, don't worry, you don't have to
hold
the door for me.
Yeah,
like,
I'll get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to fathom. It's hard to understand. Overall on the road, they haven't been nearly as good on the road as they've been at home, but man, you just look at some of these losses against these bad Eastern teams. It's like, man, why? How? Like, why can't you put it together against some of these teams? It happens to everybody. It happens to every team in the league maybe once or twice. Every good team in the league once or twice a year. But
this is a pattern and a trend at this point.
This is totally become a trend.
And
where
we just said this, where we see a road game on the schedule and we go, oh, that's a loss. Like, we were just looking at the schedule. And they have this road trip in early March that goes Sacramento, Portland to Utah before they have 6 days off for some inexplicable reason. And I don't feel comfortable in them winning any of those games, especially after what we saw against Sacramento on Monday, Sunday, whatever day they played the Kings. I don't know. All the days are running together at this point.
They are, as of this podcast, they are 9-15 against the Eastern Conference.
And there are some not good teams in the East that they've played that they've just let slip away. Even the decent teams like the Wizards, they lost that one. They lost to the Hornets at home, and the Hornets have been bad.
Yeah. Yeah. The Sixers, they lost. They had that loss to the Sixers at home.
The ones that don't bug me are like the Celtics on the road, you know, going to Toronto. If they even if they didn't,
well, they
play
split with Toronto, so I mean, you can't complain too much about
that. Well, and they played a pretty close game in Toronto the night after playing a close game in Atlanta, which also shouldn't have been close for that matter.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Atlanta was a loss too, right?
Yeah,
that was another one of their bad losses.
And my thing is too, I mean, you look at a team like the Spurs, and the Spurs are a terrible example because they've been together forever. They've had the same culture. That's just gone on and on for the better part of 25 years now with Popovich and Buford. But when they get to these points where they're like, all right, we're done messing around. We're done with these guys. And then they just put them away. They get their starters out of the game and they go on to the next game. The Wolves get up like they did against the Bulls, like 16, like, okay, they should be able to, you know, just comfortably put this away, and they let them back in. And that's when, as it's happening, you know, where I'm not even getting upset over this anymore. It's like, you know, you probably deserve to lose these games.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, I mean, Zach LaVine is out to prove something. I mean, this is a game. I mean, there's no animosity there. Well, no apparent animosity anyway. But it's always good to get one over. I mean, I know that when I worked in sales and I left for a competing company, I always loved to take a deal from the other, from my last company. It was fun. And yeah. I feel like it's kind of the same idea where, you know, you still want to get one over on your former team, even if, you know, the Bulls are rebuilding and the Wolves are going to go on to greater things. And you're never going to meet in the playoffs. It's just the little things like that that are going to motivate guys. And LaVine showed out. He was fantastic.
Oh, he was
brilliant.
That
was fun to see.
So I'm looking at the standings right now. And again, as of this taping, there are 7 teams in the Eastern Conference who are out on the outside looking in on the playoff spot. And the Wolves have played 6 of the 7 teams on the road. The only team they have not played is the New York Knicks on the road, which they will in a few weeks here. The Wolves have played the Pistons, the Hornets, the Bulls, the Nets, the Magic, and the Hawks on the road this year. They have lost all of them.
And you just named everyone on the bottom of the standings except for the Knicks.
All of those teams except for the Knicks are out of the playoffs right now in the Eastern Conference.
They won in Miami, correct? They kind of snuck that out.
Did they win in Miami?
They pulled out one game against the Heat. It actually,
yeah, because
I think both teams won on the road.
Because Deion Waiters had like a big game, didn't he? But the Wolves still won the game
in overtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the game.
Yeah, I'll have to double check on that, but I think the Wolves might have won that game. But yeah, I mean, they won at Indiana. You know, they beat Cleveland at home. That's really weird.
There are just so many missed opportunities because the West is just so competitive and they could really put themselves into an advantageous position for the playoffs. And that's really a big determinant of playoff success is who you match up with. And, I mean, playing almost half your games in Portland wouldn't be very fun. Or going to Oklahoma City for 3 games also wouldn't be very fun, but if you can move up and, you know, work to your advantage and play the lowest seed possible, and maybe you don't draw such a tough matchup like that, I think that's ideal.
Well, think about this. Okay, so they're 12-18 on the road. So if you take away those 6 losses to those 6, you know, I won't call the Pistons a bad team, but they're not a playoff team right now.
They looked like they were something, but now they might not be something.
Yeah, they've lost 3 in a row, actually, after getting off to a nice start after the Griffin trade. But so you take away those 6 losses, they're a 500 team on the road. So it's like you would think, okay, they're a bad road team, 12-18 on the road, that's not good.
They could still lose to the Celtics, the Raptors, the Warriors, and the rest of the top of the league and be fine.
Yeah. So it's like, geez, if you would have found a way to win 3 of the 6 bad Eastern Conference losses that you have, then you're 500 on the road, you're 38-21, you're 2.5 games in front of the Spurs.
How many behind the Rockets at that point?
I think you're still about 5 or 6 games behind.
Good Lord.
But, I mean, it's just like, come on, man. Like, you got it. That's... These games matter, man. Those losses to Brooklyn and Orlando and Atlanta, like, When it happens once or twice in a year, you kind of shrug it off. But when you look at it and it's become a trend, it's like, that matters, man.
Well, look at the Thunder. All of a sudden, they've come to life.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get caught with your pants down and all of a sudden, oh, shoot, we lost the spot that we had all season because we didn't take these lesser teams seriously on the road like we should have. And, yeah, you should beat them, but you can't play like you should just beat them because you won't. This is the NBA. Even the teams, I mean, that aren't going to make the playoffs, they still have pride. They're still professionals. You know, they're still out to prove something. I mean, whether it's, you know, a roster spot for next year or just proving that they belong in the NBA, period, going forward. I mean, these teams still have something to prove in some way. I mean, they don't want to be an embarrassment. I don't think even a team like, you know, the Suns or the Kings, you know, clearly, you know, want to just be like, oh, well, we're not going to win anything anyway, so what does it matter?
Yeah. We're going to be joined by Anthony Irwin, who is part of the Locked On Lakers podcast, and he also writes for Lakers Outsiders. So he's going to join us. We're going to talk some Lakers with the Lake Show coming to town this week.
It'll be good to talk about a struggling franchise that's kind of fallen on some hard times. You know, just trying to figure things out and trying to find their way out of the woods, you know, to see if they can rediscover, you know, their greatness once again.
Yeah, we're gonna see if the Lakers can bounce back from their very difficult stretch of losing that they've
had. This is actually year five.
Wow.
No, it was six. They made the playoffs in 2012. But that was
the Dwight Nash year, right?
When Nash was hurt and Kobe tore his Achilles, and you're like, okay, this team is finally dead. And Dwight had half a back.
Oh gosh. Nash was playing like shooting guard and different spurts. And like,
he wasn't moved up to small forward.
Yeah. But Anthony's going to join us a little bit. Lots to talk about with the Lakers. They just, you know, they made the trade for Isaiah Thomas. We'll kind of get his thoughts on, you know, where that is going to go, if they might try and, you know, depending on how things go with Isaiah, maybe he might be a part of the future. I don't know. Isaiah's a really, really touchy subject right now, just because there's just been some questions there about his health, obviously.
And it just seems that everyone's dug in,
yeah,
with where they are. I mean, people respond to the questions, well, I mean, look at that first game and this or that. And it's like, but there are some legitimate concerns here.
Yeah.
Nonetheless. And he could still, you know, salvage a good career somehow, but that doesn't mean that what we've seen so far this season hasn't overall been troubling. And I think one thing, too, with Anthony, that'd be good to find out, because I know he had some concerns about the Lakers' young core, not just Randall and Ingram and those guys, but also, you know, Clarkson, Nance, and how they fit in. And
Lonzo.
Lonzo, too, and what the ceiling of this team could be. And, of course, you throw Kuzma in the mix there. But just seeing if that his view on that's kind of changed after the trade.
Yeah, I'm going to ask him about Kuzma, too, because I haven't watched a ton of Lakers this year. I mean, I've watched them when they've played the Wolves and a couple of other games.
I've learned my lessons after the last few years about watching the Lakers too much, because it has not paid off. It's been bad.
But I am curious to get his thoughts on Kyle Kuzma, because from the little bit that I've seen of Kyle Kuzma, I've been impressed. But we'll get his thoughts on that. So let's take a quick pause, and then we'll be joined by Anthony Irwin. He is a co-host of the Locked On Lakers podcast, and he also writes for Lakers Outsiders as well. Anthony Irwin is with us on the Raised by Wolves podcast. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for coming on. I know Derek has been talking about having you on for a while now, so it's good to finally get you on.
We haven't had a lot of Lakers games. Usually we get those out of the way pretty early in the season, but right, they kind of staggered them out this year.
Yeah, the Lakers have only played the Warriors about 73 times and the Thunder about 74. So
the Wolves actually had their first three games against the Thunder, I think, in the first 2 months of the season. They're done with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. It's probably, you're probably better off doing that, right? Because they weren't playing very good basketball earlier on in the year, and then they've kind of figured stuff out. So hashtag blessed.
With no Andre Roberson, so maybe defense doesn't win championships, and we've just been lied to this whole time by old heads.
By your own coach.
So we obviously brought you on to talk some Lakers. The Lakers are coming to town here on Flip Saunders night later this week on the 15th. And so we thought it was a perfect time to get you on with us. obviously so much to talk about. There, you know, at the start of the year, so much focus was on Lonzo Ball and his father as well. a lot of that is kind of tapered down with Lonzo getting hurt and everything. But still, the Lakers, they are the most successful franchise, them and the Celtics, in the history of the league. And they find their way to into the news, and they make the trade for Isaiah Thomas. They send Jordan Clarkson out of town. First off, when that happened, what were your thoughts on that move?
Well, it was funny because the Clarkson trade, we were talking about the trade deadline because at the very beginning of Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka's tenure, it was they are going to open up cap space no matter what. Magic Johnson was walking around talking about two max cap spots as if they already existed, and they didn't. So you kind of left poor Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle, and to a lesser extent Luol Deng, because he's never going to get moved. But it left those two guys thinking to themselves, well, okay, where are we going to finish off the season? Where are we going to wind up at some point this year? And as they came closer to the trade deadline, it became pretty prevalent and pervasive that the Lakers weren't getting the type of offers that Magic and Pelinka wanted. And then all of a sudden, and we had just kind of accepted the fact that, okay, they'll hold on to both of those guys as throughout this year, and we'll cross that bridge, that cap bridge, whenever we come to it. And lo and behold, a couple hours into trade deadline day, that was the big news drop. And frankly, you know, the Lakers were the only ones to pick up a first round pick that day. You could argue, and I have argued, that they made probably the best trade for themselves that day of just about any team who were involved on trade deadline day. And, you know, Clarkson's a nice player. Larry Nance Jr. is a nice player. But the cap flexibility being the almost religious edict that Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka had, and that first round pick makes it a huge win for the Lakers.
Well, I mean, the way I saw it, you know, Cleveland really kind of had to sell low on Isaiah Thomas to the point where they probably did have to give a pick to get someone to take Isaiah, even if he wasn't expiring. Mm-hmm. But I do like that idea to be able to pick up that asset for the future in the pick, and then really just get, you know, the flyer on Isaiah for two players. I mean, Larry Nance is probably the most valuable player out of that. I mean, I've liked Clarkson, but it seems that everyone else is lower on him than you and me. But it really does seem just a smart way to get a, you know, cheap look at a player and get something, you know, in the deal for yourself too.
It frees up. It also, I mean, Nance is a nice player, and he's in a situation now where I think he's more valuable than he was with the Lakers. Like, it's nice to have a glue guy, the kind of guy that just helps wins, you know, all those cliches, when you're good, right? But mm-hmm. when you're not good and you're not going to come by those wins, that those difference makers aren't necessarily as valuable. So Nance is... And what you're going to start to see as Nance and Clarkson start to impact meaningful games is you'll start to see the narrative swing over to, wow, the Lakers really did send over quite a bit of on-court value. And I think it's objectively true that the Lakers are a worse basketball team now than they were when we woke up on Thursday, on that Thursday morning. But in terms of guys fitting into the long-term plans, Nance probably wasn't going to, so long as Randle is around here, and Clarkson is pretty replaceable in terms of a guy who can just score off of your bench and be like a combo guard kind of guy. Those guys can be found just about anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so it winds up, and look, I think it's a good move for the Cavs too. They weren't going anywhere with Isaiah Thomas, and Channing Frye wasn't nearly the player that he was this year compared to years past. So they did what they had to do. The Lakers did what they had to do. And I think both teams wind up better off for that deal.
What do you think of sort of this young group of players that the Lakers have? I mean, they've accumulated a lot of these guys over the last few years, you know, getting Lonzo in the draft last year. And then, you know, they had picked up Julius Randle a couple of years ago, Brandon Ingram and those guys. They get they make the D'Angelo Russell trade, and they use that pick to get Kyle Kuzma late in the first round last summer. So what do you think of just sort of this overall, this young group of guys that the Lakers have?
They're a nice core. They're a very deep core, right? Yeah. When you can move a Clarkson and a Nance and still have quite a few pieces left behind, I think they've done a good job of assembling the peripheral pieces of a really solid core. They're a superstar short still, though.
Yeah.
Lonzo, for as impactful as he was looking, that was a rather small sample size. The larger sample size to this point points to a nice point guard, maybe like a taller Ricky Rubio kind of player. And Rubio was helpful. I mean, I think I really like Rubio, especially at the end of last year. He was one of the better point guards in the entire NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But Lonzo isn't necessarily a superstar quite yet, right? They don't have their Karl Anthony Towns. Maybe Ingram can become that, and he has been night and day better this year than he was last year. And he fell into a little bit of a rut when Lonzo initially got hurt, but he's kind of picked himself off of that, and he's been able to be this 6'9" starting point guard. And so if there's somebody who you're looking at in terms of who might develop into a legitimate superstar, maybe it's Ingram, though you would kind of like to see more flashes of it. So I think the Lakers, that's why they're so heavily invested in targeting a Paul George or targeting a LeBron James, is that they know in the NBA you need that guy. You need multiple of those guys. And as nice as it is to have a deep, solid young core, you need those superstars, or else you're the Atlanta Hawks of when they were all like the five player of the month weird thing that happened.
I mean, the one thing too, I think if you're going to have a player, you know, who's kind of in that Rubio mold where he does a lot of nice things elsewhere on the floor, but you know, he'll have stretches where, you know, he can be a hot shooter, but generally not what you consider a good shooter. And you really need to surround them with guys who can shoot. And the Timberwolves failed to do that, even though he was the fifth overall pick, which seems weird not to build your roster around that player. So where I'm going with this is, I mean, you look at the roster right now, and I mean, Brandon Ingram, I mean, he's going to play a lot of minutes on this team for the foreseeable future, unless something happens, I think. Mm-hmm. He's shooting 39%, but he's taking less than 2 threes a game. I mean, does he just need to shoot more? Do they need to get outside help? What do you think?
It's been trending upward. I have a thread somewhere on my Twitter feed of what he's been doing since they went on that nice run where they won 14 of 16 games, mm-hmm. Right before the trade deadline. And that's where it's going to be interesting, because they have no need to lose. They don't have their draft pick this year. So when they made that trade and they got worse as a basketball team, you could kind of, there was plenty of, you know, kind of murmuring all around the fan base of, wait, what? I mean, Isaiah Thomas is nice and he was really good last year, but we don't really know necessarily what he's going to be this year. And they only have him for a couple months. Can they regain that momentum that they had heading into the trade deadline? And Ingram, he has never shot the three particularly well. And it's a recent development. One thing that they've really been working on him with is taking that hop into his three-pointer to give him a little extra rhythm. They basically recreated his three-point jumper this year, where last year it was more of an actual jump shot. This year is more of a set shot, and I think he's more comfortable shooting it that way. So he's made strides there, and a Brandon Ingram stride is quite long. So we just got to see how long he can maintain that development.
What is the future for some of the other guys? I mean, KCP, I mean, I know they signed with that 1 year deal, right? I mean, do they view him as kind of a role player for, you know, maybe a Paul George if they bring him in, or a LeBron or someone like that? Or is he just kind of on this 1 year rental and they'll let him walk in the offseason?
I think it depends on which, if they land a superstar, one, right? Mm-hmm. If they don't land a superstar, then he's been okay as a starting shooting guard. I'd be quite disappointed if they did all this, if they traded away D'Angelo Russell, if they traded away Jordan Clarkson, if they trade away Larry Nance Jr. And they did all that to open up enough cap space to go after superstars. If they don't wind up with a superstar, that'd be quite the kick. That'd be quite the Draymond, really. Yeah. And if they land LeBron, because of who KCP's agent is, I think there's a really good chance that KCP sticks around in Los Angeles. He, by all accounts, loves it out here. I think they could have been able to move him. It would have been difficult. They would have had to take money back. But they definitely, in most cases, they look to buy a guy out in this kind of situation. And he tries to make his way to a playoff team and earn himself a little bit of money that route. But that's probably not going to happen because he really likes it out here. And because Rich Paul is of the belief that if LeBron comes here, it's kind of like that, you know, you do us this favor, I'll do you this favor kind of thing. And you know, Brook Lopez is on that same kind of situation. The market isn't going to be very good for either of those guys out there, for anybody, period.
Yeah.
So I think both of those guys, if they're okay with 1-year deals or maybe even 2-year deals at a very team friendly rate, those guys could be back. And there's a good chance that both of those guys are pretty good value given how just remarkably terrible the market is going to be this year.
What do you think of Kyle Kuzma? Because I admittedly, and I was telling Derek this too, I haven't watched a ton of Lakers ball this year. I watched a few games, and obviously when they played the Wolves. But from the little bit that I've seen of Kyle Kuzma, I've been fairly impressed. What do you think of him? I mean, it seems to be, at least for somebody who was taken with the 27th pick, he's been a positive addition.
Oh, very much so. And that's really what's saved the Lakers over this whole rebuilding process, is that they've been able to find, like, Larry Nance Jr., I think, was the 26th pick. Josh Hart was, I think, the 24th or something like that. Kuzma was 27th. Clarkson, they bought him, and he was the 46th pick in his rookie year. Zubats was late first rounder, and they got this kid Thomas Bryant, who we haven't even seen very much of, and I'm really high on him if he continues to develop. And that's really what saved them, because their high end rookie picks, like D'Angelo Russell, showed flashes, but as Brooklyn has seen this year, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. Lonzo hasn't been able to stay healthy. Julius Randle missed his entire rookie season. Yeah. He played 14 minutes. And Brandon Ingram last year put up, statistically speaking, one of the worst rookie seasons that any rookie that was drafted that high has ever put together, right? So their high-end lottery talent hasn't really come through. It's been the peripheral pieces that I alluded to earlier that have really saved this rebuilding process. Kuzma is, in my opinion, and I'm biased because I've seen so much of him, but he is one of the cleanest offensive rookies I have ever seen.
Mm.
And it is hyperbolic, but he makes at least one or two moves per game that make me chuckle like a doofus. he just does these things randomly. He just broke out the sweeping right hook that looked a lot like, not Kareem's, obviously, because he isn't 7 feet tall, but the Magic kind of baby sky hook. And he just brought that out and started messing around with it and made it a bunch in games. And he has great footwork and he has great touch, especially from three-point range. And he has a great quick release. It's nice and high. It reminds me a lot of Klay Thompson's jumper. Not that he is the shooter that Klay Thompson is, but it just looks a lot like him. And all that said, he's terrible defensively. There's a reason why he's the 27th overall pick, right? Because if he was good defensively, then you're talking about one of the better rookies that the league has ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I know in the few times I've watched him, I've kind of thought the same thing where it's like, you know, he looks like he's, at least offensively, he looks like he's been in the league a couple of years.
I mean, maybe it helps being 22 years old and maybe just being a little more put together and polished. But we've seen that fail. Like, Wes Johnson was not great.
Oh, God, Derek, don't even say that name.
He was like 34, I think, when he entered the league. So
he was like the oldest rookie ever that was like taken right out of college.
He was like Brandon Whedon of NBA draft picks.
Similar success rate too, right?
That's about right.
Pretty much, yeah.
So now I got to ask you, this being a Timberwolves podcast and the Lakers having Timberwolves legend Corey Brewer on the team, what have you thought about what he's brought to this team? He doesn't play a ton. His numbers look fine and about what you'd expect, but what have you thought about his role on this team?
So I remember a second ago I said that Kyle Kuzma will make one or two plays per game that make me chuckle like a doofus. Corey Brewer will make me laugh maniacally. He plays... I don't know if NBA 2K still... I haven't played it in years, but when I was playing as a kid, they had that turbo button, and it would run out every so often. It was a gauge that always up. It was always up in like the top right hand of the screen.
This is broken.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just always on. He has infinite turbo for better and for good. For better in the sense that his motor, he just goes and he goes and he goes. And to his credit, he works really hard on both sides of the court. But on the negative side, he'll throw a pass to the fifth row of the upper deck.
Yeah, we saw a few of those here.
he is, but I will say this, like it sounds like I'm making fun of him and all these things, but he is probably one of the most impressive professionals I have ever been around in any walk of life. I've covered college sports, I've covered baseball, I've been around sports my whole life, and he'll give you answers.
Super good dude, man.
And he is just incredible. And so in that sense, I was kind of hoping that they might buy him out to maybe give a look to some younger guys across the NBA, but it doesn't look like the Lakers are going to do that, and it's because of how great he is in the locker room.
Yeah, I remember when he was here in Minnesota, he was always, you know, I remember there was one time where I was standing in between Nikola Pekovic and Corey Brewer, and there was the ice bucket in there. I was like, Peck, I don't want to step in your ice bucket, but I don't want to be in Corey's way. And Peck, in his, you know, Serbian accent, says, oh, don't get in Corey's way. And Corey goes, it is like, you know, thick Tennessee drawl. And it, of course, he talks really fast. So it's like, yeah, da, 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 da. It's like, what? But he would talk about like parenting with other media members and stuff like that. And I think one of the biggest testaments to Corey Brewer is that one, you never hear anyone who covered him say a bad word about him.
Yeah, such a good dude.
Well, man. And then when he left, too.
It goes the opposite way. More often than not, you hear just praise heaped upon him, like really thickly. But go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, that's all right. I mean, that's something that you don't really hear about a superstar. I mean, Corey Brewer has been, you know, just a guy. He's been, you know, a good guy to have around on a team. But I think one of the biggest things, too, is that when the Wolves, and I think 2015 was his last stint, when that ended, the team traded him. You know, they came to him like, hey, what do you want to do? This probably isn't what you signed up for. And they dealt him to the Rockets. So he at least had a chance, you know, to, you know, make a playoff run and actually be a part of a winner rather than just toil away on another Wolves lottery team.
And that was like basically the second time the Wolves had done that, because his first stint, they traded him to, it was like was it the Darko trade?
Yes. And then the Knicks let him go. And then
the Knicks bought him out, and he ended up with Dallas and won a ring with the Mavericks that year.
I mean, we all have friends all throughout the industry. And anytime I say anything even remotely negative about Brewer, if he makes one of those plays that just makes me kind of slap myself on the forehead, I'll send out a tweet like, oh, turbo Corey Brewer, it happened again. And I immediately will get at least one or two replies from people who have covered Corey Brewer. Like, don't you dare say a thing about this guy. And it makes sense because he's just that cool a dude.
Okay, so I have to ask you. So two summers ago, summer of 2016, Lakers signed two guys that 2 years later, I still cannot understand why. Like,
at the stroke of midnight.
Yeah, it wasn't so much the guys that they signed. It was just the contracts that they got. And you know exactly where I'm going with this, with Lou Aldang and Timofey Mozgov. Now, they got Mozgov. They got that contract off the books in the D'Angelo Russell trade. So they were able to sort of get out of that one. But what were they thinking? What were they thinking? I don't understand it to this day. Like 2 years later, it's like, what were they doing?
It was, for one thing, when you said, you know, not just or it isn't necessarily about the guys that they signed, but the way and when and how they signed them. It, no, it's also the guys too. It was that was definitely the head scratcher. So I lost my mind. There were a bunch of people on Lakers Twitter who were all saying, "Oh, let's just see how this goes." At that point in time, the consensus was that the Lakers had to overpay to get those guys. And I said, "Well, if you have to overpay to land Timofey Mozgov, then don't land Timofey Mozgov."
Like, he was coming off like a terrible season with the Cavs.
You couldn't even play in the finals.
Yeah, the Cavs won the NBA title without him. Like, they didn't. Yeah. They didn't
on purpose.
Yes, yeah, on purpose. Like, oh, my goodness.
And so it was kind of funny. The other day, after Magic and Pelinka pulled off that trade with the Cavs on that last Thursday, they had a quick impromptu press conference with media who was there around the facility anyway. And Bill Orem asked Magic if they had made any progress or if they had ever gotten any traction in trying to move Luol Deng's contract. And the video went viral, right? Magic kind of looks at Pelinka and says, "Man, do we wish," right?
Poor Luol.
Well, it was, I mean, you guys make fun of, or you guys can chuckle about Luol all you want, but him and Rose and Joakim Noah are going to be there playing with you guys in the next few months.
Well, yeah. This podcast is over. You have a good life. You are now blocked.
I'm not allowed in the state of Minnesota ever yet, but he has that exchange and then they quickly realize like that wasn't a good look. By itself, and they made sure to say that Luol, and to his credit, he has been very professional, and he's still tried to mentor the kids as much as he can, given the role and the circumstance that he was doing so. And he hasn't been like Joakim Noah, who hasn't done that, right? Joakim Noah was asked to step away from the Knicks because he was creating problems randomly. Yeah. He came out of nowhere. There was some criticism of Magic, you know, that was a little too real. And I kind of wanted him to go the other way. And I wanted him to thank Luol Deng, and I wanted him to thank Timofey Mozgov, because without those contracts, Magic doesn't have this current job. Mm-hmm. Rob Pelinka doesn't have his current job.
Right.
And, you know, that's kind of the real bummer here, is that if they don't sign Mozgov and if they don't sign Deng, then they probably still have that the entirety of their core here, right? They have D'Angelo Russell and they have Lonzo Ball in the backcourt with Jordan Clarkson coming off of the bench and Larry Nance Jr. coming off of the bench behind Randall and Kuzma. And they'd have this arsenal of nice young players. But the fact of the matter is, given, like I said earlier, this religious edict that they have to sign a superstar in the next 2 years, they had to get rid of a Mozgov, and that required getting rid of D'Angelo Russell. And if they wanted to get, if they were desperate enough to, you know, truly desperate to move Luol Deng, teams across the league were saying it was going to take Brandon Ingram because they had already set the market price in attaching a number two overall pick. So the Lakers decided not to do that. And they're going to wind up having to stretch Luol this upcoming summer, and that'll free up enough cap space. But it would be nice to have the entirety of the core as it should be. It would be kind of nice to have that.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So I got to ask you about Magic too, because he has been
entertaining.
Yes, yes. Much like he was as a player, maybe for different reasons and in a different way. But he's been very entertaining. Obviously, the Paul George thing last offseason created quite the stir. And then this thing with Giannis a couple of weeks ago is just, like, baffling to me because I don't understand, like, why fine him? Like, he's not, you know, I just don't, I don't get it. Is that had to been like the weirdest fine that has been put down on anybody, a player or a front office person. I don't know. What was your take on that?
My co-host, Harrison, is one of the least emotional. I call him Spock. Like the our show tends to work because I'll fly off the handle and I'll say things and I'll rip people or whatever. And he is the one to kind of ring me back in and say, no, you don't need to go that far. He was livid over that. over that fine. It was unbelievable. And so here's how I explain it to him, because I kind of took the opposite side of it. I still think it's petty. I think both these things can be true. I think it can be a stupid fine. The league can have been ridiculous in sending it down.
Was the Paul George thing, was that, do you think that might have been kind of what triggered it from the league?
Absolutely. And even before Paul George, when Magic and Pelinka were angling for Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss's jobs, one of the things that was leaked magically, and I can't believe where it came from, right, was that Mitch Kupchak wasn't doing enough tampering. So if just picture some kind of, you know, if there was a co-host before you guys on the show and there was some illegality that you didn't want yourself to be connected to, but the first thing that you said before you ever took the job was to alert everybody that you are going to be performing that illegality, that's guess what that's going to do, guys. You know? And so when they say that, you know, when they kind of sort of leaked it out to the media that this was a frustration with Mitch and with Jim, that I think set off a couple red flags. And then after that, you have the Paul George situation, which led to a record, by the way, $500,000 fine.
Damn.
And after that, they should have been like, they should have, it was kind of funny in that same press conference that Magic kind of made that Lou Waldeng comment. It came up, it just kind of naturally came up that they can't talk about other players, and Magic very comically clapped his hand over his mouth. And that's what he should have done the first time with Giannis, right? Is that, look, we've already been dinged once in a record fashion.
Yeah.
The last thing that we can, given what they are trying to do, they cannot do anything that would risk not being able to sign a Paul George and not being able to sign a LeBron or any free agents. Wasn't it the Timberwolves that also in a tampering charge had to give up either a draft pick or something weird like that?
Are you thinking of the Joe Smith deal or something David Kahn did? Because David Kahn had some loose lips.
Yeah, because I remember the Joe Smith thing.
Yeah.
Did David Kahn also do that kind of thing? Because it wound up making it so that they couldn't sign Joe Smith, right?
I can't remember what the, I'm trying to go back to the Joe Smith thing, because they had signed Joe Smith to that illegal contract and then they had to forfeit all the first round picks.
Kevin McHale ticked off Joe Smith's agent, and Joe Smith went to the, or his agent went to the, I think became his former agent. So then he went to the league and said, hey, by the way, this is going on.
Yeah.
And then the league came down on the Wolves, but they still got to sign Joe Smith. They just lost a bunch of draft picks.
Okay, so one of the concerns, and from what I've heard and from what Harrison especially has heard, is that a similar situation like that popped up where Pelinka was kind of hung out to dry, like somebody tattletaled on him, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to the $500,000 fine. But one of the concerns in that process was that the Lakers may have been punished by not being able to sign Paul George, and that would have been a freaking disaster, right? And then now if they get knocked again with tampering, I'm sure that's a weapon in Adam Silver's back pocket that he could go to. And to me, I think both these things can be true. I think it can be really petty and silly that while actual tampering is going on, Magic Johnson saying that Giannis is going to bring a title to Milwaukee, like he probably shouldn't get fined for that. But I also think that he shouldn't be talking about other players given the history that they are working with now.
Well, I do wonder too. So a buddy of mine, we've had this conversation, like when UNC has had their issues with, you know, players taking fake classes or whatever it is, or improper contact or something like that.
Oh, you mean like when Rashad McCants was on Outside the Lines and he looked right into the camera and said, I didn't write any papers. I didn't take any tests.
Yeah, that. I mean, like, you figure everyone knows about this. Like, even Mike Krzyzewski knows about it. He could have a competitive edge and go to the NCAA and go, oh, hey, so Roy's doing this over there. You should come get him. Because then Roy Williams go, oh, yeah, Mike said that. Well, let me tell you about Mike. So I don't wonder if it's the same thing with NBA GMs, where if you do that too much and you cry tamper into the league too much, if that other team will turn around and be like, oh, well, what about the time that they did this? And I mean, I have to feel like everyone has dirt on each other, and you have to be mm-hmm. really selective on when you go to the league, if it's something especially egregious and not just kind of in, outside of the unwritten rules. Because I feel like the Thunder could still turn around and say, you know, if there's anything that's too questionable, they could still go to the league and say, hey, you need to look into this. This wasn't cool.
Well, I mean, it's a different sport, obviously, in a different climate, but the New England Patriots at this point, it's known now, it's been reported that at every turn they are going to try to screw over the Indianapolis Colts. And it was because they raised awareness about the Deflategate thing and everything that came about from that. Now, Robert Kraft, when he caught wind that the Colts were thinking about signing their, I think it was their offensive coordinator, right?
Josh McDaniels, yeah.
Yeah, when it came time and Kraft found out that he was, they were thinking about hiring or they were getting ready to hire Josh McDaniels, he went out of his way to say, oh, I can mess with these guys in this situation in this way.
Press conference was the next day with no ink on the paper.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, to your point, I'm sure that I don't think to that same extent, but if the Lakers have the opportunity to at some point F over the Indiana Pacers, yes, they are going to go out of their way to make sure they make their lives as hard as possible. And here's the other thing, and this is where I'm going to sound like a large market, not good person, but I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss, but the Lakers share revenue, right? And Dr. Jerry Buss was one of the people who pushed for it. At the time, it was going to hurt him. It was going to hurt him financially to share revenue. And he still said, no, this is probably better for the rest of the league. If it comes down to a vote like that and the Pacers are saying, hey, we could use a little extra revenue sharing, guess what the Lakers are going to say? No. Mm-hmm. Tell you what, we will give you whatever it is, 500,000. We will share revenue, but you have to pay us back that 500,000 that we just got fined. They're going to do something petty because now that stuff is out there. The Pelinka kind of sort of got messed over, got stabbed in the back during that process.
The David Kahn, it just popped up into my head. The David Kahn thing we were thinking about was...
It just popped into your head in this conversation?
Well, there's so many. but the David Kahn thing that popped in my head that he got fined for was he was on...
The Beasley weed thing.
Yeah, the Michael Beasley, because the Wolves had just signed Michael Beasley after the... Or no, they had just traded for him, right?
Yeah.
They gave up like a second round pick or something for him.
2 seconds.
2 seconds from the Heat. And so David Kahn goes on radio show here, 1500 ESPN, Royce and Mackey, and they're talking with him about Michael Beasley. And he says, well, you know, Michael Beasley's a really young and immature kid who, he smoked too much marijuana.
Okay.
And I think, what was it? He got fined 50,000 and then the team got fined 50,000 too, I think as well for that. So
I like how Michael Beasley, I'm sure at no point throughout that entire ordeal did Michael Beasley think of suing for libel.
Oh, no. I think there's probably too much evidence to support that claim for it to be libel.
he might have been high while he was finding out that David Kahn was saying he was high.
Oh, goodness. So what's your gut feeling tell you on what the Lakers are going to do this summer, because they're going to have some money to spend? Are they going to land Paul George? Do you think that's a realistic possibility? I know Oklahoma City's probably doing whatever they can to try and convince him to stay there, but what's your gut feeling tell you on what the Lakers are going to come away with this summer?
Well, regarding their first and foremost target is going to be LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be, you know, that's the big fish.
Seems like a good plan.
Yeah, usually seems like a decent top priority. And then from there, they're going to, after they find out, you know, what they'll do is they'll sit down with LeBron and they'll say, all right, pick out names from a hat, basically. We have enough room to either sign or trade for whomever you want to play with. And that's where that first meeting will go. And if he says Paul George, then they'll say, hey, LeBron wants to play with you. We have enough money for both of you guys, and we have enough assets to trade for a third player if that is something that you'd be interested in. And then however the offseason plays out from there, that's how it would go idealistically speaking. Do I think that's how it's going to play out? I have no idea. There's the only people, because every time, and I play a character on Twitter. So of course, like every time anything happens that might look like LeBron is kind of looking towards the Lakers, just like the Cavs help the Lakers free up the cap space. That's like buying the Uber for your girl when she goes out on a date with another guy. Right? the Cavs did the Lakers that solid. So of course I played that up. But on the other hand of things, if Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. are decent role players and they play a part in the Cavs being legitimately better and getting out of the East and contending with the Warriors, and they do so closely enough that LeBron really thinks long and hard about not just the team that he has in front of him, but also the future, because they are also better equipped for the future. They got younger. And so the Lakers could have done the same thing for the Cavs, right? And so the only people in this entire situation, whether it's Cavs fans, Laker fans, NBA fans at large, Houston fans, San Antonio fans, the only people who are objectively wrong right now are the people who think they know what LeBron is going to do.
Yeah.
Those are the only – outside of that, it's all the big shrug emoji, right? And so
yeah.
Maybe the Lakers go after LeBron. They don't get LeBron, and Paul George and the Thunder don't go far enough to convince Paul George to stick it out with the Thunder. I thought it was kind of funny. I don't know if you guys saw this, but he did a – they just played the Lakers the other day. And – after the game, or late in the game, the Lakers smoked the Thunder, and they beat them by like 20. And at the end of the game, Paul George was inbounding the ball, and there was a slight pause in the game. I think he had kind of – actually, Corey Brewer almost tore Paul George's Achilles – or ACL or something like that. Just doing his like always turbo dives. But Paul George was standing on the sideline, and he was inbounding the ball, and the Laker fans started chanting, "We want Paul."
Yeah, Paul. That's right. Yeah.
And he kind of sort of grinned seeing it. You know, you can kind of see him try and act as if he didn't hear it. And then after the game, I think it was Royce Young or Fred Katz or one of the guys out there from Oklahoma City asked him about it in the locker room. And he made sure to say, I didn't hear it. But that's where it was really obvious that he grinned, and you knew he heard it, right? He was playing it as smart as he thought he could. Those kinds of things. And then he also had the back and forth of the interview with Sam Amick, where he said, "Well, I'm really happy here. I'm really happy with this organization. I'm really happy. But I don't want that to paint what my potential choice might be this upcoming offseason." So it's not like he's completely slammed the door. It's not like LeBron would ever slam the door. He's going to look for any leverage he possibly can. So I think the Lakers have about as good a chance as anybody at landing two of those guys this year.
Well, just like LeBron's quote too, when he was talking about, "Oh, I'm excited for, you know, what," something to the effect of like, "I'm excited for this team's future for the rest of the season," or something to that effect.
Yeah, right,
like, just
right.
Non-committal. And I feel like all Paul George had to say, "Yeah, I just thought it was amusing. It's great that fans get into this, but I don't buy into that. I'm focused on the season, blah, blah, blah." And we all would have gone on instead of pretending like there isn't video of you reacting to the chance.
Well, it was funny too, because Oklahoma City saw that in Los Angeles, and their fans started chanting like within a week for Paul George, like, "We love you, Paul." And there was, I'm biased, so I'm going to be looking for certain things here. And again, I play a character on Twitter, but I didn't see any reaction from him at all. He just made his free throws and went back on defense. And it was just kind of funny that like the dichotomy, the juxtaposition of those two reactions there was just kind of funny in how that all played out. And again, would it shock me if a team with Russell Westbrook and Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, if he ever accepts a impactful role, makes a run in the playoffs and impresses Paul George enough to stick it out in Oklahoma City? No, that would absolutely not shock me. Would it shock me if the scenario that I presented earlier with LeBron making it to the finals with all of these new pieces, would that shock me? No, of course it wouldn't. But it also wouldn't necessarily shock me if the Lakers somehow swindled both of those guys away from situations that they currently are in.
So if Paul George does sign with the Lakers, what number is he going to wear? Because I'm pretty sure 24 and 13 aren't available.
I wanted him to wear R. that would have been my choice. The other popular one is like 0 or 00 kind of thing, because he played out like an agent 0 out there in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. that would have been kind of fun, but it would be funny. Like if the Lakers, like Kobe is supposedly going to play a key role in selling these guys on Los Angeles. If Kobe shows up and says, "Hey, I'll let you wear number 24." Like, how does Paul George pass up on that?
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's probably better than Pat Riley dropping his championship rings on the table to get LeBron.
The Lakers could do that too, right? The Lakers could drop 16 titles on the table. And by the way, I'm not going to let this go before I get out of here, but you had mentioned that the Lakers are the most successful team outside of maybe the Boston Celtics. The Celtics titles don't count when they were playing against accountants. Like those, I didn't forget that comment. But yeah, it's going to be fun. It's fun all over the league. I really like the idea. If the Lakers do walk away with just Paul George, right? Let's say it's just Paul George. That's a really fun little rivalry between two pretty similar teams at that point, right? Between the Lakers and your guys' Wolves. Like those matchups would be really fun 3 times a year. I'd love to watch those games.
Well, I think just in general, the Lakers being good is good for the NBA. Even if people get sick of the Lakers, they get sick of the Knicks. When the Knicks and the Lakers are good, and I'll even throw Chicago in there just because their fan base is so large and they became an iconic franchise because of Michael Jordan, I'm said Jackson.
We need more big time player playoff games at MSG. I'm sorry. Like, this is with the Knicks especially, like, this has been going on for too long now. Like, this has been going on long enough. And I get a little annoyed with, like, Knicks fans. My cousin is a Knicks fan, so he likes to, you know, complain.
James
and whine
Dolan
about
should
him,
have already been tried for malpractice. So
yeah.
Oh yeah.
But it's like It's time for the Lakers and the Knicks to be back in the playoffs, and there should be memorable playoff moments at Staples and at MSG again. I think that needs to happen. So
yeah, well, it's gonna sound terrible, and I obviously hope nothing but the best for Kristaps Porzingis, but it might be a good thing for the Knicks that he is not gonna play the rest of the season. I wish that they would have been better off had they made trades and acquired more assets for the remainder of this year and as they head into the offseason. But if they can get another lottery pick and what by all accounts is another really good deep draft, mm-hmm. and they can pair that with Kristaps Porzingis and Frank Ntilikina, those are the kind of strides that these big markets need to start realizing they have to make. That this idea, the frustration that I have as a Laker fan and as somebody who covers a team and as somebody who has to deal with an angry fan base for the last 5 freaking years is that the Lakers, this idea that cap space was going to save them from all of their struggles is kind of asinine. We know that it's not going to work out that way. And if they do walk away with superstars this year, it's because those superstars look at the roster and they say, "Hey, Lonzo is actually a nice point guard, a good defensive point guard that makes it easy for me to play basketball with. Brandon Ingram took legitimate strides forward, and it looks like he's going places." And with both of those guys, if I don't want to sit around and wait for those guys to develop, they have done enough to raise their price to a place where they can get me immediate help. But it was never and never for the rest of time will we see a scenario like the Miami Heat where it was just cap space that got them to mm-hmm. where they needed to get to. That we're never going to see that again.
Well, I just think it's got to be tough for a fan base that has literally been good for about 60 years before this 5-year stretch. Like, they have never really had a, I don't think ever had a stretch like this. So, and there were some Laker fans like, why can't they just win?
Well, it's, I feel bad, obviously, talking on a Wolves podcast because it's been, what, 10 years? That's the
14, but who's counting?
Yeah. Felt like 13. But, like, if I'm going to sound terrible saying this, but yeah, I mean, the Lakers, to put it in perspective, every fourth year they have been in the finals, let alone the playoffs. They have only missed the playoffs before these last 5 years, 4 times in the last 60 years. And yeah, the fan base hasn't been thrilled. And when you go out there and you speak honestly about the Lakers, it's kind of like when you hear something that you don't want to hear, even though you know it's true. Like when my wife told me a few months ago, hey, Anthony, it might be time to start losing some weight. I didn't necessarily like hearing it, but I can see myself in the mirror, and it was time to start losing some weight. And that's what the Lakers, the Laker fans, I think what hurt the most was that deep down they knew when people were analyzing the state of that franchise, and they were saying that it was pretty rudderless there, especially at the end of Mitch and Jim's tenure, where they're handing out contracts to Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov, and they have to overpay Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov just to get them in the door. When people were saying that the state of the Lakers is in dire straits, they had to accept, and it hurt the most that they had to accept it, but it was just true. There was no other way to look at it. And the nice thing is, it seems like at least there's a direction that the Lakers are going in now. You know, same thing with the Wolves. 14 years is a really freaking long time.
Yeah.
But when you draft a Karl Anthony Towns and you acquire an Andrew Wiggins, and I don't know about the contract that he was signed to, but those pieces leading to helping get, and you draft a Zach LaVine and he helps you get Jimmy Butler, and then now it looks like you're heading towards the playoffs again. Like, just having a direction is so freaking important, and that's where the Lakers currently they're 2 years behind the Wolves because they're just now figuring out the direction that they have to go in.
Well, I think that was a nice, you know, change when Kevin Love got traded, because it was clear, like, fans were excited for 2014. I mean, Kevin Martin was still good. Nikola Pekovic, you know, was still one of the best big men in the league. And then, of course, there was Kevin Love. But you looked at the long-term prospects for that roster, they were already capped out.
Their peak was going to be an 8 seed.
They had no youth, yeah. And they're at best going to win 45 games if they had gotten lucky. Like, there was nothing, you know, there wasn't going to be much to that. Yeah, they would have made the playoffs once, twice maybe, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, look at the poor Trailblazers right now, right? I mean, they're going to, at some point this offseason, they're going to have to sit down and really consider trading either Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum just to either get off of a bad deal to open up enough cap flexibility to maybe convince somebody that might want to play with Damian Lillard, or to just acquire enough pieces to maybe start building for the future beyond Damian Lillard. And it's really too bad that somebody as talented as him, what was their, did they win a playoff series? I think they might have won one playoff
they
series
with
Damian Lillard.
They beat the Rockets and Clippers?
Yeah. They beat the Clippers like 2 years ago.
When the Clippers had everyone hurt.
Yeah, everybody was banged up and hurt. Yeah.
Right. And so, but that's where they currently find themselves. They're capped out as a marginal playoff team. That's the worst place that you can be in the NBA. And you know, they're looking across at the rest of the Western Conference, and they've been basically leapfrogged by you guys. There's a good chance that the Lakers might leapfrog them this upcoming summer, and the Jazz lost Gordon Hayward and still might be a better team than they are because of Donovan Mitchell being a potential superstar, you know, and all of these things are taking place, and all of those teams that I listed are still going to be flexible moving forward.
I feel like those, the Pelicans are going to be the next team in this conversation. You know, if they bring
What's
back
that?
Boogie, I feel like the Pelicans are going to be the next team in this conversation where it goes, great, you have Holiday and Cousins and Davis maxed, but now what? You don't win anything.
Well, the other thing, too, is, and this is where the Wolves deserve a ton of praise, is that they realized, okay, yes, we could just sell playoff seats and profit off of those playoff seats for the next 4 years or so, right? And a lot of owners would take that. I would say the New Orleans Pelicans owners would happily do that, make that deal.
Yeah.
Right? They might know, they probably know that, yeah, we aren't going to contend for a title with
this
team.
The Bensons care more about the Saints anyway.
Right. Yeah. That, yeah. Exactly. And so what they'll say is that we'll sign Boogie after this Achilles problem to a deal so that we can tell our fans, look, we're trying, I promise. We have Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, and eventually it might wind up costing them Anthony Davis. Right. And that's where, you know, the Lakers, it's easy for them to make that decision and it's easy for them to bottom out because people were going to pay to watch the Lakers anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, if I was a Wolves fan, I'd be pretty proud of the fact that my franchise recognized that, no, I want a higher ceiling than just selling three or four playoff games every year for the next 4 years.
Well, it's like what I said about the Bulls, you know, like this year earlier, Michael Jordan's greatest accomplishment was getting fans to sell out United Center every single night to make them number one in attendance to watch some awful team since his retirement. Like, they had a few years here and there, but otherwise just awfulness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it, and what he did was he helped build up a market to where, again, they can bottom out this year and still be okay. I mean, I don't think their books will look as clean as maybe the Lakers or even the Knicks, but they'll do okay. They'll be okay to sell enough tickets this year and withstand a rebuilding process. And that's what it all comes down to, is what is the best way to have sustainable success so that you don't go through those stretches of 14 years or 5 years even where you don't even sniff the playoffs or you barely sniff the playoffs.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just like when you think about the Wolves and you look at, you know, even last year before the Jimmy Butler trade, you just compare like last year, there was so much about last year that was frustrating, but you mm-hmm. all, you could also see, okay, there's actually something legitimately cooking here. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, 5 or 6 years prior in the Khan era, it was like Johnny Flynn,
it's like
Wes
learning
Johnson.
To cook.
Yeah.
You tasted the recipe last year, like, oh, this is just missing like that extra oomph, and that oomph was Jimmy Butler. Where in years past it was like, oh God, just throw it out.
that's the kind of oomph. But and look, I mean, I've heard one of my favorite things to do is I'll follow three or four people from various fan bases all over the it makes me better at not just covering the Lakers, but eventually I want to be able to cover the entire NBA, right? And
yeah.
And there has been, I have seen some frustration with Tom Thibodeau, but without Thibodeau, I don't know what Minnesota's chances would be at retaining Jimmy Butler.
None.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Minimal. Yeah, yeah, zero chance.
And so like this stretch, that oomph is all for naught, if not for some of the growing pains that come with signing and hiring a coach to do not just coaching, but also bring legitimacy to the front office. It puts you guys in a way better spot than you would be without him. And that's, again, that's the point here, is what can these franchises do to attain sustainable success?
Well, 80 minutes and we finally hit Wolves talk. This is awesome.
Oh man, Anthony, we could go all night with you, man. This was great stuff. You can find his podcast, Locked On Lakers. He also writes for Lakers Outsiders as well. Dude, thank you so much for coming on with us. We have to have you on again soon. Maybe we'll get you on in the off season, and we'll see what happens with the Lakers this summer. And if one way or the other, we'll have to get you on and see how things go.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on. I had a blast.
Hey, yeah, us too. Thanks for coming on.
All right, Anthony Irwin joining us here on the Rays by Wolves podcast. Well,
I think this is a record.
Yeah, I think this might have been our longest one that we've had in the history of Rays by Wolves. This is episode number 98, so we're getting close to number 100 here in a few weeks. We're going to have a special guest, I think. We're not going to say
the name.
It
sounds like it.
Yeah, sounds like it. We're going to have a special guest with us in a couple of weeks for our 100th episode of Raised by Wolves.
All our guests are special, but this one's extra special.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Thanks to Anthony Irwin for joining us this week. And really good stuff there with the Lakers. And we'll see how things go with them over the course of the rest of the season. And they got a big summer potentially coming up.
Night on Thursday, Lakers come to town. Should be a good and potentially emotional night.
Yes, very much so. Flip Saunders night this week as the Lakers come to town to take on the Wolves. Thanks to you at home for listening to the Raised by Wolves podcast. Again, we were brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand, official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. You can find this podcast on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a favorable rating. You can find us at podcastone.com and, of course, 1500ESPN.com as well. For Derek James, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your Wolves basketball. Enjoy the All-Star break. That's coming up this weekend. And we'll talk to you next week.